We are on air. Hello from Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. This is RTE's Your Politics podcast. With me, my colleagues from the RTE team, Paul Cunningham and Micheál Lehane. Micheál Lehane astounded at some of the vagaries of modern life. And also, let's talk tariffs.
Territory of tariffs, please.
Yes, much safer. So it all changed when Simon Harris went to Washington.
Well, it changed when he was in Washington, but of course the news and the big change conveyed to him as he was live on the 6-1 news. But it was in keeping with what the Taoiseach had been picking up in the minutes before that in his meetings in Washington. And I suppose kind of the message coming from government here is that Ireland and Europe certainly not out of the woods, but it does create some bit of space. And the feeling from the Taoiseach repeatedly is that he believes there is an enthusiasm on the US side for meaningful talks. But of course, 90 days isn't anywhere near enough if that's going to happen.
And there seems to be a view, doesn't it, because Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, Paul, was there to meet with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. Yeah. And we've been getting to know him and his name, and also getting to know Scott Bessent. I forget
who is the more sort of someone who will be recognised by the markets is probably the more leading individual in step with more of
the
markets
count.
Thinking.
They're very rich, but they can count.
Yes.
And then on the other hand, you've got Peter Navarro would be kind of leading the pro-tariff camp.
Yes.
Peter Navarro, an advisor, Jared Kushner, apparently, in a book about his economic philosophy, and he quotes, is it a Ron Evans?
Yes,
I think
exactly.
It's a Ron Evans, which many people believe is
himself.
So those are basically the two camps, and the feeling would be in Washington that, and of course, Peter Navarro, Elon Musk has no time for. He's been tweeting. So there is a split going on behind the scenes in the White House, and for the moment, the let's listen to the bond markets who don't like your tariff plan is winning out.
Well, I think that was it. We'd heard that a number of months ago that what the administration listened to was the bond markets. So that's the money markets. That's the ones, you know, who set mortgages, who lend money to business and indeed roll over government debt. That's underlined and in red. And so the stock market didn't really count. So when the stock market was crashing, people were saying, well, fair enough. What happened in the previous 24 hours before the big change was that the bond markets began to get excited and began to charge more. It hasn't been laid out, but what we think was the plan was that when the stock market crashed, people would get scared. Money would then go into the bond markets and that would lower the yield or the coupon or the price of interest that they charge on it. That would drive the bond markets down, which would make it easier and cheaper for America to roll over its debt. And that in turn would mean that there wouldn't be inflation in the system, which means the Federal Reserve would be obligated to cut interest rates. That was
Peter Navarro will be quoting you the next
Indeed.
Time.
Indeed. And then what happens? But the bond markets are holding for a while and then decide, we don't like this. And it began to go up rather than down. And once that began to happen, then America's cost of its massive trillions and trillions of dollars worth of debt began to look shaky. And then suddenly that was where people intervened and pressure came on. And so we now have this pause. But as Micheál said, what we have is a pause. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate. But I think what you can say, Mr. Navarro now seems to have lost his luster, and others who are listening to the bond markets seem to be more in the inner circle of Donald Trump.
It was actually one remarkable fact this week. Do you remember when we all knew what the pigs countries were? That was Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain. And of course, after the banking crash, we were so broke, so badly indebted, we were labelled the pigs countries and we had the highest coupon rates.
On our 10-year bonds.
And the US rate...
Back my four years in Brussels is just flooding back to me now.
And the US rate was higher this week than Greece, Ireland, Italy or Spain and or Portugal.
And that's telling. I presume what would happen is that if it was possible, and it seems like an incredible thing to be able to do, that the US administration was able to renegotiate with a whole pile of countries and that effectively a 10% tariff or tax, importation tax, did remain in place. Well, then Donald Trump could say, well, forget about it. It was messy. You know, omelets, making omelets, you have to crack a few eggs. But we're in a better place now than we were a few time, you know, some time ago.
Yeah.
No doubt that'll be the argument. Although one interesting little thing is that it seems that a number of investors, when shares were really low, found out that the bond markets had influenced the president. And before the announcement was made, a spike happened in the prices on the NASDAQ. And so there's now pushes among Democrats to ask every single politician who made any investment in the previous 48 hours to declare at what time did they do it, just out of, you know, concern that there might have been some insider trading happening there.
Do they start with the president there? President Donald Trump made $2 billion yesterday, didn't he, on his Truth Social, the increase in value there. Anyhow, on the other hand, while there is huge relief here in Ireland that and in the EU and in Brussels, they've paused the countermeasures that were announced this week. That's for the existing tariffs of 25% on aluminium, steel and cars. So the German car industry is taking a big hit.
And parts.
And parts. There's still that 10%, as you say, Paul. There's still the 125% China tariff. So, you know, fears of avoiding a recession, maybe Brussels can get it. We still don't know as well what's going to happen to pharma.
Pharma's still there, and that's the great fear around here, isn't it? And that was made clear to Simon Harris in the trip to Washington as well. And, I mean, that seems to be where much of the debate during the kind of lengthy debate that took place in the Dáil, that's where the fears were. I mean, in the opposition saying a few things. One is you have to look to other markets. You have to get off the reliance on foreign direct investment. And also then just the Taoiseach kind of saying that there's very little that they can do if you are in a period of volatility, and the hope that had been that you would, which kind of has transpired in the end, that you won't have the immediate big tariffs before you get into negotiations.
And a huge relief, of course, in Irish drinks industry, particularly those niche suppliers who are selling whiskey to the US and liqueurs into the US. You know, last week they were looking at a 20% tariff. This week it's down to 10%. And of course, the fear about the EU countermeasures, that that would bring the threatened 200%, that's off the table for now.
And it's interesting from a political thing that there was unity across the benches on government and opposition. All sides were saying what we shouldn't do is get into tough guy immediate retaliation. Instead, you should just try and let this one unwind, try and play a cautious role, and maybe it won't be as bad down the road. And that more cautious approach seems to have worn out, even if it is the case that the Taoiseach and opposition TDs are saying we're not out of the woods just yet.
Yeah, and they had got themselves off the EU countermeasure draft list as well. The agri-foods weren't on it and the drinks weren't on it either, which was seen as a diplomatic coup.
And for Anthony Scaramucci and his podcast on the rest is politics US has just become fascinating listening in these turbulent times. But his advice at the moment is just let the bond markets and inflation do the talking. Donald Trump may not listen to very many other people, but those he can't turn back the tide.
Yeah, I suppose that's where it stands. But I mean, it's still such a tricky period ahead. And if you notice the government language from the beginning of the week up until kind of today, there was no prospect of a recession about a week ago. And then it hasn't been ruled out day by day as it goes on. I mean, that kind of tells where things are at here. It's been kind of an extraordinary week in the sense that you did have all these things unfolding worldwide, which are going to have a direct impact here. But yet Leinster House was kind of basking in the sunshine and seems kind of in its own world almost, unable to influence things really. A strange, strange feeling, despite the fairly sombre tone struck by Micheál Martin and Pascal Donoghue particularly as well.
Especially after all the roaring and shouting and upheaval and democracy at stake of the past 3 months.
Yeah, the world has moved on and there's a seriousness, and there was no great attempt on any side really to challenge that this week. Things have got serious now. It's just how will that collective maintain if things do get very grim? I presume the only for so long. There was a briefing with opposition parties and the Taoiseach today, Piers Doherty, speaking afterwards, said there has to be a focus on that thing again and what the government can control. That's greater investment in energy and housing to boost competitiveness. But how long can that continue too? Because despite the best will in the world, when it does come to capital projects, inevitably when there is a squeeze on, at some point the squeeze goes there, doesn't it?
And also you have the issue of planning. If you talk about electricity prices, you know, the north-south interconnector, we've been talking about it since 2003. They're talking about delivering it in the 2030s. Mm-hmm. It's lost in the courts. There's still that inability to get it done.
And still confusion about, again, we've heard a lot of talk about a housing czar or an infrastructure office. And there was some conflict, wasn't there, between James Lawless and the Taoiseach last week over the choice of words to describe this. Brendan McDonagh, the name being tipped there at the moment, is that right?
That's the name, but I mean, it's just hanging there in the ether. We don't really know. I think to a certain extent now that It seems that the government is beginning to get into gear, that there probably will be a slew of decisions. But the announcement obviously is the easy part. It's the hard yards of getting something over the line. And you know, it's something which we don't have much confidence in, really.
And the game of prediction seems to be over, doesn't it? I mean, there are some people saying that you could see around only 25,000 homes delivered this year. The Taoiseach wouldn't go there, obviously enough, saying people can't have it both ways. Yeah, he's not going to make predictions again after, of course, what unfolded during the general election campaign.
Which sounded remarkably like what the housing minister was saying on Morning Ireland Monday couple of weeks ago.
He said he never makes predictions.
Never.
Yeah. No, but what the Taoiseach did tell Morning Ireland last Friday was that the National Planning Framework will be going to Cabinet this month. And that's kind of a key document because a lot of local authorities' planning, the legislation, that's gone.
And the main emphasis in the aftermath of that from the housing minister was that he wants local authorities by the end of the year to have those development plans reopened and land rezoned. This kind of new phrase about the right number of homes in the right locations, that is places that have proper transport. But again, what's going on in the Dáil for the last few hours is a debate on Uisce Éireann, and that real great problem does seem to be around water services. And it doesn't seem that that is going to remedy itself very quickly, despite kind of great political will and it seems great political enthusiasm to invest more in water.
And the timeline here, because by the time the National Planning Framework and all the local authorities have done their rezonings and you get to the end of the year, then if you're a developer, they have to get their financing, then they have to go through planning. The new planning legislation will be commenced over the next couple of months, but we've got to see how does that, all of that play out.
Because, commenced and legally challenged, possibly.
Yes, because there's a whopping number of appeals going on in the system at the moment under the old legislation. So politically, the timeline means that you're 3-4 years out from delivery making a substantial difference to this fall off in numbers we've been getting.
Yeah, I suppose so. Are you looking, though, and this seems to be the signal that there's these brownfield sites in urban areas that they're talking about, and so as well as having them properly zoned in all local development plans, that there is some kind of a financial plan in place as well, whether that's the government creating some mechanism whereby developers won't have to put in as much of their own cash at the start or to make more finance available. There does seem to be some move in that direction. That seems to be what's been talked about.
And that ties in with the Land Development Agency. Its report, which it does every 2 years, also went to Cabinet last Tuesday. And part of that was acquisition of land in relation to brownfield sites, which ties into what Neil was saying.
A warning, though, from the housing minister on that front, which seemed to be different to what the previous office holder said, that when it comes to those particular parcels of land, it's not always straightforward. You have to move what's currently taking place there to another location and that it gets stalled very quickly. So that was seen as a silver bullet, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. There didn't seem to be as much hope for it this week, I think.
And more grim news in the Dáil this week. And again, it's the gap between political promises and in this case, 19 million that was assigned by the Dáil to get rid of the waiting lists for children with scoliosis. And of course, that leading to the huge controversy about unauthorised devices that were used in surgery in three cases. There are a number of other controversies. The report came this week and it really was grim reading, Paul, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think first of all, it was the personal thing just for the children involved. And that was where your heart just went out to these children and indeed their wider families of them learning the details. Like we knew a lot of this, but just to see it in black and white, the final report was very, very difficult to hear. But then it breaks into the second thing. How could it be that there was a structure in place and which management wasn't cohesive enough to prevent that from happening? And then begs the question, well, where else is that, particularly in areas of health where we're continually told more money than ever before is being spent on this, and yet this was an outcome. And it does beg questions just exactly how efficient is it. So the Health Minister, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, has got a real job in her lap in being able to convince people that there is change. And you can take that in, not just in relation to children and scoliosis, which is a peculiar case where people would have thought it must be possible to solve it and hasn't been, but you can take it right across the board. Yeah. And, you know, one place to go would be to UL, you know, down to Limerick and see how the hospital is getting on down there. How long does it take to sort?
One thing that does seem clear, though, at the end of the weekend, this is just this harrowing kind of scandal. And typically around here, you would have felt that that would ultimately wake its way to a public inquiry. There is no enthusiasm for government and there is a strong resistance to go for any future public inquiries.
And there's also David Cullinan's been raising the question about orthopaedic surgeries, yes, and unnecessary orthopaedic surgeries on children. There seems to be, there's a report being worked on there as well.
Yeah, that report actually should happen quite soon because I think the deadline was last weekend for people to make their final submissions to that after the draft report has already been made available. And of course, parents are being written to that you could see hundreds of people potentially who had hip surgeries, children who didn't need them. Unnecessary is how it's been described in the Dáil, not meeting the threshold, I think is the official term there. Now, Piers Doherty today, speaking about that, said that the current audit that's now close to publication, that doesn't go far enough at all because there are people contacting the political parties who say as far back as 2016, there are cases of children who were due to have surgery, but when they sought a second opinion, it was unnecessary. And he cited the example of one girl who is now a very good gymnast who was due for surgery, very close to it, but the second opinion ruled it out.
And of course, if she'd had the surgery, would her career in gymnastics have been possible, would be the question.
That is the question. So this is going to be another huge, huge issue. And there's a lot of parents receiving letters at the moment.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it? We seem to be back here again and again and again, whether it's, you know, maternal births.
Yeah. It's just ongoing. Right. And I think that's where that sense of a government in action has to be able to give the sense that a line has been drawn and one's focus will come back to management. To what extent are the managers able to manage?
There is that question with the hip surgeries, isn't there, though? Like, do they go back now? Do they go back to 2014, 2016? Or do they just get this first tranche of the audit published?
And take like an indicative assessment of it.
You could have permanent health inquiries on the go, couldn't you?
You could. And I suppose what you do need then is the Oireachtas Committee on Health at the very least, isn't it, to try and get into the detail of this?
Well, you've given us the cue there.
What a segue.
So lead off, Micheál.
Well, I suppose the most interesting thing about it, how could it come to pass that there would be a big loser around the formation of committees? But there is one, and it is the Social Democrats, who at the very last minute decided that the banished, the man in purgatory, Owen Hayes, would be plucked from that at the final moment and would be deemed a Social Democrat TD after all, even though he's been sitting over in the far chamber of the Dáil, not allowed any Social Democrat speaking time. But for the purposes of getting an extra committee chair and getting more spaces on committee, generally more positions, yesterday Keane O'Callaghan wrote a very, very clear letter to the clerk of the Dáil saying, after all, Owen Hayes was one of theirs. And of course, that means they get two committee chairs, just like Labour. Labour not happy about this. And generally around the place, it was viewed as a fairly cynical move. And there is a sense that the Social Democrats can be quite sanctimonious. But on this one, it was kind of old fashioned politics that was at work.
Because it was quite a flip, this idea that they've been castigating the government. You can't have a TD who's in government, but not in government. And now we had an independent TD.
No place in the Western world.
Now we had an independent TD who isn't independent. He's a member of the Social Democrats until he's not. And then he's independent again.
Today now on the Oireachtas website, he's a Social Democrat. As of last night, he was an independent.
Has he changed his seat, though? Is he still sitting away in splendid isolation?
I didn't see him in the chamber today, so I'm not sure.
But it's a tricky spot for the Social Democrats because there was that idea of high principle being applied and then, you know, getting down and dirty politically to get that extra seat they were prepared to do what needed to be done. And I'm sure that...
Did they sell their soul?
I'm sure Micheál Martin and Simon Harris will be asking that question. They'll be revelling in the next opportunity to inquire of the deputy leader of the Social Democrats as to his views on such matters.
I met a veteran Labour Party person who was in the House today who just couldn't contain themselves. That this is one of the great moments, I think, in Labour history as they see it. That they believe the sanctimoniousness has been punctured with no little aplomb.
All right.
See, it mightn't travel to, you know, the population at large, but inside here, this one has got a currency.
The sun's getting.
If you're looking at people chatting on the corridor, this is the one they're talking about.
So why do the committees matter? And what committees? What range of committees and who got what?
Yeah, I suppose like two things, the passage of legislation, but also the formulation of legislation. I mean, and two big things there seem extremely obvious. One is the proposals to do with the triple lock are going to have to go before a committee before they make their way into the Dáil. And also what still remains so politically contentious, whatever the exact momentum behind it is the Occupied Territories Bill. Again, that's another one that's going to have to go to the committees first. And you could see, certainly around the triple lock, some proposals making it there before the summer. There is a new committee now on defence and national security. That's gone to Sinn Féin. A lot of the big ones have, of the seven, finance, public accounts committee, obviously, but also justice and petitions, are all going to Sinn Féin. Labour get arts and media. That could well be Alan Kelly, I'd say. Also, the committee on the traveller community goes to Labour. Health goes to the Social Democrats, and also the Drugs Committee returning, they get that one as well. The independent groups, the group with the independent and parties, get the Irish language one. Catherine Connolly could be in line for that, and then budgetary oversight will go to someone from Independent Ireland. The regional independents say they never wanted the chair; they weren't really interested in that.
Which is interesting, Micheál, because I sort of thought they were very interested in that a number of months ago.
I suppose, and if it were to come, given everything that's happened, it would have to come from the government side, and it seems they're not asking.
There was a line drawn.
So they are a bit other in that regard then.
But just on, I think that the defence and security one is the one I'm really interested in, because the issue of the triple lock has become so heated, and now you're going to have a government bringing forward a policy which is going to interrupt this committee chaired by Sinn Féin, who are completely, totally and utterly opposed to any change to the triple lock outside of a referendum. So it's going to be, the dynamics are going to be fascinating.
And we have now, don't we, and again, whatever the divisions between the opposition parties in terms of the divvy up of committees, there's a coming together, isn't there, in this pro-neutrality alliance. Which is going to be making its voice heard, I'd imagine, in the weeks
ahead.
Yeah,
so what you're seeing is a major political campaign building here now, probably less vociferous in how it approaches things in the Dáil chamber, but no less powerful for that. And it will be interesting to see just how far this can progress going into the summer. I sense it's going to be difficult, and I sense the ultimate big test around all this still is the budget and still is the greater investment when it comes to defence. And what way will that work, especially if there's a tightening of the finances?
But there has been, I mean, there is pretty much broad agreement, is there, on the isn't there on increased spending, whatever the divisions on the triple lock or in terms of protecting neutrality. So, I mean, that seems to be locked in, that level two spending to 28, isn't that right?
It's true. And we also have...
It's been a slow start, though, hasn't it? Yes. I mean, the increase has been nowhere near what the likes of Colm Berry believes it has to be.
Yeah, but they would say it's record in its focus and that they are going to hit it by the target. And the Taoiseach Minister for Defence says that we know he's asked his civil service to already prepare going to level three. So that's, on the one hand, you've got the political promise. And so what we're waiting to see in the budget is that matched by hard cash when the Exchequer figures might be down.
And the interesting thing as well, that's going to be when the money is, you know, being released and new equipment is being bought. And particularly, you know, given everything that's been happening in Trump's first 100 days, a big question in Europe now about, do you buy from the USA? Is it safe to buy from the USA? Will you be able to get your parts in future and so on? And do you switch to European defence manufacturers?
I think that is going to be one of the big fascinating things after this trade issue is resolved. To what extent is it that European nations look at the United States and say, you're now a neutral figure, you're not an ally. And on that basis, we can't trust you. So, for example, when it came to fighter jets, Donald Trump had said that we're going to sell them, but these allies mightn't be allies. So we'll downgrade the tech on those planes so they can't be equal to ours. Now, that's pretty tough stuff. And you've already had some signs within France, for example, that just wouldn't be accepted. So could it be that as a result of the isolationist position being taken by the United States, that it makes Europe move faster in coalescing around a common objective? And that will be really, really interesting to watch.
So Simon Harris won't be going on a trip to America to buy guns, you're saying?
He was, how many times has he been there in the past couple of...
A lot.
Twice in a couple of months. And I tell you, we need to have people over there.
Barry Heenan. Let's talk about Barry Heenan. He's been making headlines again. Of course, we know that he moved seats, didn't he? He was sitting beside Michael Lowry. He was seen standing beside him in that visual image that's become a meme since. And he has since moved seats, but he's back in the news, Micheál.
He's back in the news because a lot of money has been allocated for health projects in his constituency, St. Joseph's Hospital, and the big bit, the over 100 million for the new A&E in Beaumont Hospital. Now, his advisor, as he terms him, Finian McGrath, the former junior minister, says that is a sign that the Heenan deal has come to fruition and is already delivering.
Deal.
And of course, Taoiseach says, and the Taoiseach, that there is no constituency deal. Now, today, Micheál Martin, speaking about this, said that you don't get something like 100 million for a hospital without it already being on track. So how could that be part of a deal? But, I mean,
success has many fathers, doesn't it? And mothers.
Yes.
But I suppose it does show, obviously, there were commitments given at some level. And I suppose the way that it was termed by the regional independents up to now was that they would play a part in the review of the National Development Plan and it would come through that route. This has happened early, perhaps in the sense if you're trying to illustrate the power of a deal, maybe a little bit too early.
I want to wrap up the podcast, and I know you joined with...
Paul's people on the bus, you know, as to the measure of where
I
things
was on the
are
bus
at.
On the way in.
Anyone?
No, I didn't ask.
Speaking where
that.
I was gone.
What
gone.
Bus number is it now? It's not the 46A anymore.
E2.
E2.
I'm not impressed. No, 99 years we were getting ready for the centenary and then they took it away from us.
Yeah. Do you know someone who'd have taken that bus journey quite a lot, of course, is Richard Boyd Barrett. And that's what I wanted to say at the conclusion of the podcast.
Yes.
Because, of course, he's going into his treatment. In fact, I was talking to him a week ago here. He's going into his treatment for throat cancer next week. He spoke about it very openly and honestly with Claire Byrne this week. And it was something that politicians from all sides of the House, and we join with all of them in wishing him a successful treatment and a good recovery.
Yeah, I mean, he was brave, came out, felt that his constituents needed to know, so he wasn't going to disappear. He was on Claire Byrne on RT Radio 1 talking about first found a lump in his neck around the time of the election campaign, left it for a few weeks, but not too long, fair play. And he's now been informed that I think it's as a result of the HPV virus.
Yeah, it's a viral cancer, yeah.
And that means that there's usually a better outcome, but he said, I couldn't say that I'm not worried. So he's off there. His doctor said, you have to give everything to this. That's what he's doing, and we all hope he's back here as soon as possible.
Okay, and we all hope we'll be hearing his voice again in Leinster House fairly soon. That's it for this week. Enjoy the sunshine. Oh, by the way, yes, if you're coming in out of the sunshine, you can always email us, yourpolitics@rte.ie. Talk to you soon. Bye.